Hello and welcome to Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, talking all things golf in Wisconsin, here's Gary and Rob. Talking.Golf is sponsored by the American Family Insurance Championship in Madison. The 2022 AmFam Championship is June 10th through 12th at University Ridge Golf Course in Madison. It is back in its full splendor this year, highlighted by the AmFam Championship Friday Night Concert Series at Breeze Stevens Field featuring Lady A. Tickets for the event are now on sale at amfamchampionship.com. Since its debut in 2016, the AmFam Championship has raised $12.6 million for charity, with proceeds distributed by the Steve Stricker American Family Insurance Foundation. That's the AmFam Championship, June 10th through 12th at University Ridge Golf Course. And with that, we welcome Gary D'Amato into the Talking.Golf podcast. I'm Rob Hernandez. And how appropriate that AmFam Championship comes on board as our sponsor here for the next couple weeks heading into the tournament. Then today, Gary D'Amato, on Friday, our recording day, with Steve Stricker returning to action and returning to action with a bang.
Yeah, Rob, it's incredible. You know, it's almost 7 months since he last played in a PGA Tour Champions event or anything of significance for that matter. And he starts out with a couple birdies right out of the chute, looking a little thin, I thought, on TV. Didn't you think so, Rob? And then finishes off strong with three birdies on the back nine, shoots 67s, one shot off the lead. Pretty incredible start for a guy who was in serious trouble a couple months ago.
And he was actually tied for the lead with Stephen Elker, who's the hottest golfer on the PGA Tour Champions, and Ernie Els. Ernie Els has picked up a birdie at number 15. He now leads at 6 under as we record the podcast. And I tell you, I since I haven't seen Steve in person, he looked to me fairly normal. But having read his pre-tournament interview, he was really concerned about his strength. And I thought that, you know, there were a couple times off the tee where he wasn't able to control the golf ball the way he wanted to. But with no expectations, he certainly seemed comfortable recovering from any trouble he put himself in.
Yeah, you know, he did hit a couple of squirrely shots, especially on the front nine early in the going after those couple of birdies. But yeah, totally to be expected after a guy hasn't competed for that long. And his only real blip was that three putt bogey on number three. And from, I don't know, 80 or 90 feet, he had a monster putt there. And I think missed about a 4 or 5 footer coming back. But yeah, I mean, just I never could have predicted, you know, shooting 5 under and being in the hunt and for a long time in the lead. I just wouldn't have predicted that.
The only thing I would say, Gary, is that if your expectations are low, you play relaxed. We've seen Steve kind of press at times out on the PGA Tour Champions. Let's face it, he hasn't played there a lot since he turned 50 because he's still been competitive on the regular tour. And then he had his Ryder Cup captaincy duties. But I just felt that, you know, when you're just happy to be there sometimes, and I think we've all experienced this, sometimes you play your best golf without those huge expectations.
Yeah, that's a very good point, Rob. Yeah, he went into this, I'm sure. You know, he said he wanted to play well, and of course he did. But in the back of his mind, I'm sure he thought, you know, no matter what I shoot, it's good to be out there again. And it's going to be relaxing. It's going to be fun to be out there seeing the guys that he hasn't seen for a long time. And yeah, I'm sure that he took a tremendous amount of pressure off himself that he might normally have felt, you know, going into an event, you know, maybe coming off a win or having played several weeks in a row. He probably would have, his expectations definitely would have been different than they were today.
What did you think of his pairing? He was paired with Marco Mira and Fred Couples. Fred Couples hasn't played since the end of last season on the PGA Tour Champion, since the Schwab Cup Finals here in Phoenix, and has only teed it up, I believe, at the Masters in competition. To me, there's no better guy to model yourself off of if you're trying to stay relaxed and playing with Freddie Couples. That was a great pairing for Steve Stricker, day one back.
Absolutely, and they're pretty good buddies. You know, they've served on Ryder Cup teams together as assistant captains, and then, of course, as an assistant, Freddie was an assistant to Steve at the Ryder Cup last September. So, yeah, they know each other very well, going back many, many years. I remember covering those two guys back when my journal was spending money, Rob. I went down to Georgia and covered Stricker against couples in a Anderson Consulting World Golf Match Play Championship, but way back when. And that had to be, you know, 93 or 4, somewhere in that area. So, yeah, they've known each other a long time. And then O'Meara is about as easy going a guy as there is, except for that triple bogey he made early in the day. But other than that, yeah, good pairing for Steve.
Yeah, I thought that was cool. Nikki Stricker, his wife, on the bag. You know, after that 3-putt bogey there early in the round, I was really impressed at his putting, you know, and I guess maybe I shouldn't have been. But, you know, when you're doing it in competition versus just practicing it, you know, it's totally different. But, you know, he rolled in some pretty good par putts, too, with some decent length to them. And it looked like the Steve Stricker of old. I mean, this was a real promising debut. You try not to get too, you know, overexcited about one round of golf. But, man, this far exceeded expectations.
Yeah, I agree. And you raise a good point because tomorrow is going to be a whole different ballgame to see how he recovers. You know, he's 55 years old. He's gone through a very serious illness. And, you know, I know he's been working on his game, and especially in recent weeks, I'm sure he's been playing a lot. But you're right, this is a different situation. Now he's got to come back and do it again tomorrow. So we'll see. I mean, he could shoot 71 or 72 tomorrow, and it still wouldn't be disappointing, probably to him, but not to anybody who follows his career.
No, so an outstanding round by Steve Stricker at the Insperity Invitational. His first round back after a serious illness following the Ryder Cup last fall, and the Insperity Invitational being played just outside of Houston at the Woodlands. It will continue through Sunday. Steve Stricker with an opening round 67, that's 500 par, first competitive round on the PGA Tour Champions since last October. I believe that was the Sanford International. Jerry Kelly today, a real tough day, 3 over par, 75. He finished bogey par, bogey double, and then par on 18. So a tough back nine for Jerry Kelly. He's currently T65 in this invitational event. You know, Gary, we bring AmFam aboard. You know, this has got to be a real promising, you know, for Steve, because I know he's going to want to perform well in his hometown. We're going to get full fans back, full galleries. We're going to have the Lady A headline concert at Bree Stevens. We're going to have the celebrity foursome on Saturday. We're going to hear about that in a couple weeks, the details as to who's coming for that. There's a real excitement, I think, about, you know, the PGA Tour champions as we get the, hit the meat of the season here.
Yeah, the AmFam, if Steve had been still ill or still recovering and wouldn't be able to tee it up in the AmFam, it would have been a huge blow to that tournament. He means so much to that tournament, to the city of Madison, as does Jerry, two-time defending champion. So, boy, there'd be no better story than to have those two guys go head-to-head again in that tournament, Rob.
Sure would. And, you know, when we just keep seeing the PGA Tour champions get better and better, I mean, we saw a lot of guys that, you know, weren't there last year because they weren't 50 yet, like David Duval. And, you know, there's a lot of opportunity here for this tournament to grow and you know, with some of the big names that'll be coming in the next few years.
There is, yeah. Boy, Duval, though, I watched a good part of the telecast today, Rob, as I know you did, and yeah. Lanny Watkins was picking apart Duval a little bit. His swing just looks so much different than it did when he was in his prime. I guess that's to be expected. You know, he took long periods of time off when he got married and adopted his kids and didn't play a lot. But he doesn't look like the same player, certainly, that he did a long time ago. And I guess none of us do, right, Rob?
No, none of us do. And I'm sure some of it's physical, but I think the swing mechanics, you know, and Lanny Watkins had some great comments on that, and just how, you know, the swing just doesn't look very solid. And what he's trying to do, almost like he's trying to find a different ball flight, you know, to try to take into his 50s. And it just doesn't seem to be working. And we've seen that with a lot of guys who've had success on the PGA Tour who really struggle coming out on this tour. And, you know, you don't get a lot of time to struggle out here. These are 3-round tournaments mostly. And, you know, even with, you know, major championship status, you know, you still have to, you know, earn your keep out there in the senior circuit.
You do. And I remember years and years ago when Duval was just coming into his own and starting to win, and Stricker played with him somewhere. I remember Steve telling me, and that was, of course, when Tiger was in full bloom and playing fantastic and number one in the world, and Duval was starting to challenge him. And I remember Steve saying, I think Duval might be even better than Tiger. Well, didn't turn out that way, but for a while, he sure held his own against Tiger. I mean, they were one and two with Phil right in the mix, I guess, as the three best players in the world for a couple of years at least.
And before we leave the topic of Team Stricker, Mario Tiziani, who has limited status on the PGA Tour Champions, not in the field this week, but he certainly was playing golf. He wins the Arizona Senior Open. Three down, Gary, and by my count, what is that, 47 to go after winning the Minnesota and Wisconsin State Senior Opens last year. He gets his 2022 started with a win down here in the desert.
Wow, that's news to me, Rob. That's incredible. Three Senior Open titles in three different states. That's pretty good. Pretty good for Mario.
Well, and the one that made this kind of unique was, you get these things down here in Arizona, and you get a lot of guys. I think Dennis Trittler, who was a former PGA Tour player, and has kind of floated around different mini tours, club pro circuit, that kind of thing. You know, he was in the mix. Ben Walter, former Badger, was in the mix, and so it was an interesting, leaderboard. Willie Wood was in the tournament too. So it's kind of a bit in between, like the Wisconsin State Senior Open and a PGA Tour Champions event, and Mario was able to win it here. I'll call up the scores as we talk about it. Joe Stadler flagged me on that one earlier, and of course Jim Kelce had already seen the tweet about it, so we've got scores on our website. Mario Tiziani with the win there, and let me see if I can call up this leaderboard from the other day. Here it is. He shoots rounds of 74, 64, 69, and he beats, Paul Trittler out of Scottsdale, Arizona, by one shot. Willie Wood, another shot, or six shots back in a tie for third with Harry Rudolph III. And Ben Walter was, let me see here, he finished T17, 73, 70, 77. And then Eau Claire native Tony Rolick, who's living down in Mesa, he shot 73, 80, 69, finished T21. So a few guys with Wisconsin ties, and I think Mario for his win, pocketed $7,500, which, isn't a bad days or bad week's work here, for winning another senior, open championship, but he's gotten a couple of starts on the PGA Tour Champions. I'm sure he'll get the start in Madison. And that's probably where, at this point he's going to have to need to, really kind of, go after a W and try to get some more stable status out here on the senior tour.
Well, he's certainly capable of, of contending in a PGA Tour Champions event. We've seen it before. He came close. I think, I don't forget where it was, Rob. You'll remember, I know.
Yeah, up in,
you've got
up
a line like a steel trap, Rob.
Well, up in Sioux Falls at the Sanford last fall. Yeah. He got the invite there to Andy North's tournament. And so that was, really a good, a good barometer of where he was at. And then he came out and performed well in the senior tour qualifying school. But as we've seen with Skip Kendall in the past, as hard as it is to earn one of those five spots through the Q school, it's even more difficult to try to gain status with that, with that status, because you're going up against these guys that have been out there for years and know how to, ham and egg it in the, without the, the threat of having to go back to Q school hanging over their heads. So we'll kind of see where Mario takes it from there. And then I also had to chuckle today. Steve Stricker, not the only Edgerton golfer to make a quasi comeback, although I think this will be a one and done for Alyssa Farrell, the former Michigan State star out of Edgerton, starts birdie playing on a sponsor's exemption at the Epson Tour event in Garden City, Kansas. She's a past champion there, Gary. That's why she tends to come out of retirement to play this one. And she, however, has made a couple bogeys. She's currently two over par, as is Tess Hackworthy, who and Casey Dennison both came within a shot of making their first cuts of 2022 last week. Tess on the Epson Tour and Casey on the LPGA Tour. So kind of funny to see Alyssa Farrell back in the mix. She's a teaching professional now in the Madison area. I know that from looking at her Facebook page, she's going to be leading the junior lessons down at Town Country Club in Edgerton, where both she and Steve Stricker, played their junior golf. And then she's also going to help out over at Koshkonong Mounds in Fort Atkinson. And boy, I tell you, neat to see her giving back to the game, and another great outlet for young, especially young women who want to not only learn about the game from someone that's been around the junior circuit not so long ago, but also someone like Alyssa Farrell, who you know, really was one of the most successful high school and college golfers to come out of Wisconsin in the last decade or so.
Yeah, that's great, Robin. You mentioned Casey Danielson. She's just teeing off just about as we speak right now, as we're recording this podcast, in the second round. She probably needs an even par round, maybe, or just to be safe, one under, to make her first cut on the LPGA Tour. And they're playing it in Palos Verdes Estates, which is, you know, basically her stomping grounds when she was at Stanford. So if there's a place to do it for Casey, this might be the week. And we hope she comes through and makes a cut here.
Yeah, and so we'll see how she fares it. The scores haven't gone too low there today in the morning wave. Mariah Jatanagarn, with a 200 par round going so far in the early going, is to 8 under. But Lydia Ko's 4 under is the low round in the morning, and she's only at 6 under for the week. So a lot of opportunity for Casey Danielson to, after shooting a 71 in the early wave yesterday, chance for her to maybe make a cut here on the LPGA Tour. Gary, as we segue from professional golf into college golf, even more to buzz about here, because as we were watching Steve Stricker on the early broadcast on Golf Channel on the PGA Tour Champions, we're sitting here looking with wide eyes at what the Wisconsin Badgers did on day one of the Big Ten Championship down at the Pete Dye course at French Lick Resort in Indiana. The Badgers, with a 400 par 284, they currently sit second behind Michigan State after back-to-back 14th place finishes in the conference championship. Mike Wilson, in his first year, certainly seems to have him peaking at the right time. They're led by senior Griffin Barella, who does what seniors do. He finishes birdie, birdie, birdie for a 300 par 69. He's currently T5. And a couple guys at T9, Cameron Huss out of Kenosha, shoots 71, as does Robbie Morway of Mequon, a senior who's closing out his career. He finished, what, is this right, eagle, birdie, birdie?
Yeah, it's incredible, Rob. What a finish for those guys. They're top three players, all in the top 10 individually. And let's see, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. They combined, those three players combined to play the last three holes in 8 under par. Which lifted them up basically into second place there. Just incredible finish for those guys. And whatever Mike Wilson is doing over there in Madison seems to be working.
Well, let me ask you about one thing that we know that he did do here. And part of it, I think, was weather driven, because, you know, there weren't really any courses that would simulate what you're going to find at French Lick, we would hope, for a Big Ten Conference Championship. But because of the weather, they went to, I think it was 4 or 5 different courses in the Madison area. Over a 4 or 5 day stretch, going by memory, it was Bergamon, University Ridge, Blackhawk Country Club, Nakoma Country Club. He posted the scores through an app on his Twitter account, or on the team's Twitter account. And I thought Gary provided a level of accountability going into a tournament where it's all about accountability. This is really the one tournament, no matter whether you're ranked number, you know, in the top 10 of the country, or where they are, I believe, just ahead of Marquette at like number 92, maybe, and in Division One. I mean, now you know, you're just, these are qualifying rounds, and I'm not sure if they went strictly off of those scores, but, you know, this is a pretty solid lineup that's played most of the year. They throw the transfer Daniel Oz in there at number 4. He's been in and out with, you know, Jacob Beckman and a couple other guys. But and then Coulter Smith's the other guy we haven't talked about. I like that idea. I don't know. What did you think about, you know, broadcasting to the world what your guys are shooting in a qualifying round? It was essentially a miserable weather week, a lot of wind, and just to let people know this is what we look like.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea, Rob. You know, every coach wants to foster that intra-team competition where guys are battling for spots, because it makes everyone better. But to broadcast it to the world, I think, is usually the coaches, you find out what the lineup is, right before they go and play. A lot of coaches keep that information to themselves, especially the scores. So to see that, I thought was really interesting. And I'll say one other thing about this Big Ten. I just played the Pete Dye course a few weeks ago, Rob, on my way back from the Masters. And Adrian Dumont de Chassart of Illinois shoots an 8 under 64. I did not see a 64 by anybody on that golf course, Rob. It is brutally tough. And of course, that's where Charlie Danielson won his Big Ten championship a few years back.
Yeah, and Adrian, for the Illini, one of the guys who's in the PGA Tour University rankings to get status after, which means this will be his final year, so he gets to go on and perhaps you know, get a Korn Ferry Tour status or some starts on PGA Tour Canada. And so he's certainly off to a great start. Heartland's Pearson Hunt had a little tough go of it there between the last few holes of the back nine or the front nine. He shoots a two over par 74. He is currently T31. And then also, by the way, the Illini right behind Wisconsin at two under 286. And then one other Wisconsin golfer in the field, Bennett Swavely out of Hudson, competing at the number three spot for Minnesota. He comes out and shoots also a two over par 74, tied for 31st. The Gophers, however, back at 11th place. What's unique here, Gary, and again, much like Steve Stricker's start, you can't, it's one round. We can't get too high over what the Badgers did today, but it's certainly a better start than they've been in the last 2 years when they finished last in the conference. But they're ahead of number 19 Illinois, number 25 Purdue, number 44 Northwestern, and then way down in 10th place is number 27 Ohio State. And this can turn on a dime, but. And I think the Badgers will probably have to win this thing to get an NCAA regional bid. But it does show, you know, that they seem to be pushing the right buttons, this new coaching staff.
Yeah, and of course, and you have to give some credit to Michael Burson too, Rob, departed. But he's the guy who recruited these guys. He recruited Cameron Huss when maybe some other coaches didn't see what Michael did. And recruited those other guys, Griffin, Barella, and the guys, Robbie Morway, all the guys in the top 10 right now. But you're right. It's only one round. Let's see what they come back and do tomorrow. But what a great start for this team and for this coach and for all these guys on the team.
So Mike Wilson and Zach Seifert, his assistant coach, they've also had Nick Robinson serving, a former Badger golfer, serving as a volunteer assistant coach. And he also posted scores in that little qualifying deal they did last week over in Madison. One other thing, Gary, to note too, is during this run up to the Big Ten championships. And again, you know, you're always trying to keep your guys on edge. You're challenging them. The other thing was, it came to light that Mike Wilson getting two grad transfers. One, Max Schwarz out of Emory University. Now Emory, Gary, doesn't play in a conference that has enough schools to earn an automatic qualifying bid to the NCAA Division III championship. However, being in the top, I believe the top 10 in the country, they're most likely going to get one. So that'll be coming out here this week. And he's the kid who we talked about, had the 10 birdies in a round of, I believe it was 500 par 67 recently. And so he can get it done that way. And then the other transfer, a Madison native, Clayton Tribue, he is competing in his conference championship this week for Davidson University, the Atlantic 10 Conference Championship down on the Watson course in Reunion, Florida. And Clayton had it going for a while as well, got to 3-under through 14 holes, finishes with 3 bogeys in his final four to shoot 72. He is currently T10. Davidson shoots 286. They are only 2 shots behind Virginia Commonwealth, which leads the way at 284. So, again, you know, even though Griffin Barella, Robbie Morway, a couple guys that'll be on their way out after this season, it looks like Mike Wilson's done his homework and is bringing some pretty capable guys in to replace him.
Yeah, and it's going to take, you know, it's going to take a couple years until he gets, you know, all the guys in that he wants. But these are great building blocks for the program, with guys who are in the program already when he got here, are playing some really good golf. And I think that, you know, we've said it many times, but I think that goes to whatever Coach Wilson's doing over there. He's having some success, and maybe this program, you know, which hasn't had a great run lately, bears watching in the future, Rob.
And we can't stop our talk on college golf without taking a look back at Marquette, which came oh so close to winning the Big East championship again. Seton Hall, the highest ranked team in the Big East, comes up with a great final round, I believe it was 10 under par, and rallies past both Marquette and UConn to win the tournament. And Hunter Eichhorn and closes out a stellar, exceptional career. I believe he was T5. What's your takeaway from Marquette's close call down at Pine Mountain, Georgia?
Yeah, you know, they just got outplayed on that last day by Seton Hall, Rob. You know, they played well.
all four guys, all four counting scores, I believe, were under par, and all four of them finished in the top 17. So you can't ask for much more than that. They just didn't have, other than the first round, they didn't have a guy go super low, especially when they needed it, you know, toward the end there. But, you know, as Coach Bailey said, you know, we just got outplayed by a better team today. So you can't be too disappointed when you play great golf and the other guy just beats you, you know. So, but it'll be interesting to see, you know, Hunter Eichhorn's almost certainly going to get an at-large bid as an individual to the NCAA regionals. And I guess we'll find that out. Is it Tuesday, Rob? Golf Channel's going to carry that live.
I think Wednesday is I believe is the selection show. What I saw when they had the women's show on last week. And so, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, I really feel it's too bad. It was a strong year, I thought, in the Big East, especially with the way UConn played in the second round. So you had Marquette with the 281 in the first round, and they led by five. And then UConn, you know, comes up to tie with the 283 in the second round. And then Seton Hall's 278. And to your point, Gary, 282 in the final round, and you get, you know, 171 from Hunter Eichhorn. It was bogey free, but only one birdie on number two. So I'm sure he feels he left a few out there. And Josh Robinson out of the five spot played really well with a 71. Nicholas Evangelio with a 70, and Tyler Leach with a 70. And then Max Lyons, the kid who shot the 64 in the first round, struggled in two and three. But boy, you know, when you shoot that 64, it's hard to follow that up. You know, I really liked what I saw. And I think, you know, Steve Bailey's comment that if they go out there on that final round and give it their all and feel good about the way they played at the end, they're going to leave with a smile. They left with a smile. They left with a trophy. And, you know, a 282 score was the second lowest round on that final day by seven shots over the third best score that day. So, you know, again, you can't fault the Marquette Golden Eagles, and a great run there by Hunter Eichhorn. And like you say, hopefully we'll see him, you know, in the NCAA tournament. Right now, as we speak, by my count, we've got in Division I men, Harrison Ott, who helped Vanderbilt win the SEC championship. He is in Division II, Christopher Cola out of Fond du Lac. He gets there with his team. Chico State gets an at-large berth. Hunter Robinson out of Balsam Lake, Wisconsin, and Northwest Wisconsin. Concordia St. Paul, I believe, won their conference, so they're off to the regional in Noblesville, Indiana, next week. Logan Paczynski out of a conference champion in Davenport, Michigan. He's going. Drake Wilcox was a conference champion in his for Queens University. Drake out of Sheboygan Falls. And in Queens, also off to the NCAA Division II regionals next week down in Valdosta, Georgia. Division II, we've got an individual qualifier in Maggie Vienendahl out of New Richmond. She qualifies individually with her work at the University of Sioux Falls. And then, again, Division III bids will be coming out right now, having clinched Carthage for the women, UW-Whitewater for the women. And then also Sydney Brand out of Brookfield with St. Catharines, the winner of the MEAC last fall. They're going to postseason play. And then one other one that we were informed of this week, Jolie Guyette out of Green Bay, out of DePere High School. Her Mesa Community College women's golf team is off to the NJCAA National Championship in a couple weeks down in Sanford, Florida. That's not too bad, Gary. And like we said, there could be more with Davidson playing and the Badgers playing. We'll kind of see what transpires here the rest of the weekend in these NCAA men's conference championships.
Wow, what a rundown, Rob. Was that information at your fingertips, or did you have that laid out in a chart somewhere?
I've got it on a
grid. Just reel off those names.
It goes back to your sweet spot thing that we did last week. I've been adding to it. It wasn't quite this robust, but you know, I don't think we ever published the results that Drake Wilcox won his conference championship and that Queens got the automatic bid. But you know, again, you know, they play in the same conference as South Carolina Aiken, I believe, and that's where Caden Nam's going next year. And then of course Brock Hellenic out of Kaukauna plays at Queens and have been in the lineup for part of the season, but you know, much like a lot of these schools, you know, with the good competition, you know, got knocked out. And because of what, you know, that competition, Queens is now at a level that we'll see, you know, how far they can go in the Division II National Championship. I like Queens, you know, opportunity. I like Chico State. They play in a real strong conference out in California. I think it'll be interesting to see what Hunter Robinson and then Logan Paczynski out of Stevens Point can do for their schools. They're kind of further down in their lineups, and they you know, haven't really, you know, a lot of these upper Midwest Division IIs haven't really, you know, been on the radar or moved the needle in Division II golf. So we got a lot to look forward to. And this is all before we get to the summer tournament series with, you know, the WSGA, the WPGA with our state AMs and state opens. But man, I tell you, there's a reason golf is good in Wisconsin, my friend.
And Rob, we haven't even talked about high schools yet. And that's, and nobody, I've told people when I was at the Masters, I was talking to other sports players. I said, nobody in America covers high school golf like Rob Hernandez for our website, for Wisconsin.golf. Man, you just do such a bang up job covering high schools and colleges, Rob. Hopefully, and I know you probably hear it from people, but hopefully people are grateful that, that there's a place to look for scores. There's a place to look for results and feature stories and conference recaps. But man alive, Rob, this is the busiest time of the year for you, isn't it?
Well, it is, Gary. I thank you for that. But what's neat is that, you know, if for those that, you know, listen to the podcast, we often reference our page views. And Gary and I are sometimes scoreboard watchers. I know Gary D'Amato is a scoreboard watcher on his Twitter account to see what tweets move the needle and which don't. I haven't found that spot on my Twitter yet. But you know, we've had huge numbers with our high school results. And I got to give a shout out to a couple guys involved with the Coaches Association and really all the coaches for that matter. But, we've got a couple guys that are helping out with getting us results. Ryan Dahl down at Waterford and Adam McDonald down at Waukesha South are, with this new live scoring program that a lot of the coaches use, they're helping get us the outputs of those. Easy to read, real crisp, and those things are of great interest. And especially, Gary, these are guys who are out there coaching in this brutal weather that we've had, and then they come home and they do this. But especially Adam, I mean, in the Classic 8. But that's helpful. But we're getting great numbers there, and then they compare to the great numbers that you had on your the hockey stick putter story, and then this week, and we'll talk about this in a second, but. The great stuff going on at Sand Valley. So yeah, there's been a lot going on with high school golf, but the challenges, and I'm glad we can do it because boy, and I think you can feel the pain of the high school golfers because you tried to slog 100 holes yesterday. You got through 90 with the fundraiser over at the Bog. I mean, we're not talking, midsummer, put on the sunscreen and enjoy a day on the links type of golf right now, are we?
Rob, it's like Groundhog Day after day. Today's a little better, but it's been 38 to 45 degrees, windy, rainy, day after day, it seems like, this last month. And I can't believe, give credit to all these high school golfers going out and playing in this stuff, and some of them shooting some remarkable scores. I found out firsthand yesterday, Rob, how tough it is when your hands are numb, to play good golf. Not that I would have anyway, but but yeah, hats off to all these kids for going out in this stuff and competing in tournaments and shooting good scores.
Are you thawed out yet?
I'm thawed out, but every joint in my I didn't know I had so many joints in my body, Rob. They're all sore today. Oh my goodness! Yeah, it was a tough day, but we raised 20 of us raised about $170,000 for the MAC fund. So it was. I'm not going to complain about playing golf in the cold when there are kids out there struggling with cancer and who need all the help they can get. And the MAC fund does a great job. And so I won't complain about playing golf in the cold, Rob.
I saw on Facebook, Stephen Watson out of Channel 12 in Milwaukee was there raising money with you. And our friend Kevin Van Rossum too, from, one of the rising stars among our career amateurs. I like to call him the next Bob Gregorski. or the next Mark Bolowski for that matter. I mean, from the MAC fund, and was Bilo out there or was he seeking shelter in warmer climates?
Bilo was out there, Rob. And I was one of my, the guy I played with, quit after about, 80 holes or 82 holes. And I soldiered on for another nine. And I believe I was the last guy to come in the clubhouse. The clubhouse was completely empty. There were two cars in the parking lot, mine and Bilo's. He waited until the very end until I finished.
I love it. You're off the last guy on a golf course, aren't you? You could play until dark every night, right?
I just wanted to keep going. I had no chance to get in 100 holes because we had about a 1 hour frost delay. And in order to get in 100 holes, you got to start at the crack of dawn, basically. So I got 90 in and couldn't get to 100, but that's okay because we raised a lot of money and for a great cause. And by the way, I talked to Kevin Van Rossum before we teed off for a bit, and he's not going to play much stuff this year, Rob. He's got a son who's just starting getting into golf, and he said he's going to, between his job, the demands of his job, his company bought another company apparently. And with his son playing, he's going to play a lot with his son. And he said he might only play in the match play, the state am and the state open. So we might not see a lot of Kevin this summer, which would be too bad because he's a great guy and a really, really good player.
Too bad, but all for a good cause because, you don't get those years back with your kids. And some of my, most treasured memories are taking the kids to their, whether it was on the Futures Tour, the Junior Tour, or the Players Tour, to some of these events and just hanging out and getting to meet the other families too. A lot of lifelong friendships culled because of that and the great work that the WPGA does. So we'll look forward to seeing him there if we don't see him out on the regular circuit. Gary, I want you to stop using that F-bomb though on the podcast. Frost down here, that's five letters, but it's a four letter word. In Arizona, we had some frost over the wintertime, and that's and I think people are starting to feel that way in Wisconsin. It's going to be May 1st on Sunday. We should not be having any frost talk.
Well, hopefully that was the last of it, Rob, because late April, you certainly don't expect that. You know, you can't expect a 70-degree day in late April, but you certainly hope for 55. I mean, the average temp high right now, I think, is 60. So for it to be 20 some degrees below the average high, that's pretty brutal, but we'll warm up. One of these days, Rob, we'll have summer even.
Well, that would be great. Let's hope that they do it in time for the AmFam Championship. Talking.Golf, of course, now sponsored by the 2022 American Family Insurance Championship, which will be played June 10th through the 12th at University Ridge Golf Course. Go to AmFamChampionship.com now to check out, to buy tickets for the tournament. You can also buy tickets for the Friday night concert series at Bree Stevens Field featuring Lady A. And, of course, don't forget, you'll be getting details soon on the Saturday foursome featuring Andy North, the celebrity foursome. In the past, of course, it's been Brett Favre, Jack Nicklaus, Lee Trevino, cavalcade of stars that have come through there. And that'll be on the Saturday of the tournament week, June 10th through the 12th, Talking.Golf, sponsored by the 2022 American Family Insurance Championship. Gary, final segment here of Talking.Golf. Normally we would need to drone on about all the stuff that we've done beyond the competition that we've talked about. And by the way, Steve Stricker is now tied for the lead again. Ernie Els with a late bogey. And let's see. Ooh. I got to count 2, 4, 5 guys tied for the lead. Two of them can still take the lead. Miguel Angel Jimenez and Strick's good buddy, Scott Verplank, usually a house guest out there at the Chateau de Stricker at Cherokee Country Club. Scotty, 500 through 15. Miguel Angel Jimenez, 500 through 16. Currently, Stricker, Stephen Elker, and Ernie Els in the clubhouse at 500 par 67. Of course, that's the Insperity Invitational down at the Woodlands. But, boy, it was a busy week even before guys started teeing and gals started teeing it up in competition this week. Gary, you had the big story earlier this week. On the heels of yet another golf course going to Sand Valley, all the amenities, including the world's largest putting course, a 500-yard driving range, and interactive golf games, Sand Valley is going to become a place where you check in, but you don't really want to check out, right?
Yeah, that's right, Rob. That's a good way to put it, like a Hotel California, right? Hotel Sand Valley. Yeah, the Kaisers, Michael Kaiser Jr. and Chris Kaiser, who own and run the resort, have listened to their guests, what the guests have asked for in recent years. Everybody wants a pool, Rob, so they're putting a pool in. The Kaisers themselves are big into tennis. They've already got some grass court tennis courts there, and now they're going to build an indoor tennis center. They're going to add a restaurant. They're going to add, as you've mentioned, a 500-yard driving range that will contain, as I said, even Bryson DeChambeau's biggest bomb, and the world's largest putting course. When I asked Michael Kaiser Jr. about that, that's the claim, world's largest. And I said, how do you know that? And he said, well, it's pretty hard to fact check that. But he said, ours is going to be almost 400,000 square feet, 8 acres putting course. I can't imagine there's one anywhere in the world, anywhere in Europe or the UK or anywhere that's bigger than that. So, Rob, you could almost hit driver on that putting course, or at least I could.
You might need to. Well, I mean, what, in putting courses have become the rage. I know there's the new one over at Erin Hills and or recently, constructed. It seems like everybody's putting in a putting course these days. It's kind of fun to get out there and, you know, maybe with a beer in hand, go out there and see, you know, if you can make the putts you didn't make on the golf course, right?
Yeah, that's right. And then another really cool thing they're doing is they're building a smokehouse barbecue restaurant. And in the back of the restaurant, there's going to be hitting bays. So you could have a dinner, have a drink at the bar, walk to the back of the restaurant and play any one of the Dream Golf courses, which are the, all the courses owned by the Kaiser, the Bandon Dunes courses, on virtual, on machines, you know, on, with the technology with simulator golf. So, and you can order food there and eat it. So what a relaxing thing to do and place to be, you know, go in a restaurant, get a bite to eat and saunter to the back and play out simulator golf. And hitting balls actually out onto the range though. So it's not, you're not hitting into a net. So that's a cool concept, I think.
Absolutely. And I just fact checked at least one place in your story on the Erin Hills putting course, 63,000 square feet for Erin Hills. So what were we talking for Sand Valley?
400,000, Rob. And I've been on that Erin Hills putting course and it's gigantic. It's enormous. So I just can't imagine one that's, you know, six times bigger.
That's incredible. But I think it speaks to, I mean, you know, Sand Valley, and we're going to find out this summer with the state amateur being up there at both the original championship course and Mammoth Dunes. We'll be up there covering the state am in July and staying not far away in a VRBO, Verbo, as some people like to call it. So we'll get I grew up in that area. I anticipated kind of a rolling out of the red carpet. You know, my hometown of Wisconsin Rapids would become this, this nightclub hotspot, but it really hasn't happened that way. And I guess, you know, once you get onto the Sand Valley property, there doesn't seem to be a huge appetite to leave it. Is that what I'm getting the sense?
That is true, Robin. Yeah, I think the Kaisers, you know, they're very good at retail golf. You know, they've had an unbelievably successful model at Bandon Dunes, where when you go to Bandon Dunes, you go there to play golf and you really don't leave. I guess there's a little town nearby, Bandon, Oregon, where there's a couple bars and some of the golfers go into town. But once you go onto those properties, you're there to stay. And I think that's what their aim is and what they're accomplishing at Sand Valley, is get the golfers in there and give them everything they want so they don't have to go anywhere else.
Well, it's a neat concept. And again, you can go to wisconsin.golf. Still our top story. And I think until the Stricker story bumps it, it'll be up there in the top spot for a little while. But you'll be able to find it. Major expansion at Sand Valley with the world's largest putting course, a 500-yard driving range, and interactive golf game. What more can you possibly put at Sand Valley? I mean, did you ask Michael what's next on the wish list? I mean, my goodness, it's almost like, what do you give a golf course that has everything? They've even got the par three course, 17-hole sandbox.
Yeah, and that, you know, that we haven't even mentioned that there's two other courses coming. You know, Tom Doak is building Sedge Valley, which is basically what all these amenities are going to be surrounding Sedge Valley. And then we've got the Lido that will be probably nearly completed by the end of summer and open next year. So there's a lot more golf coming. And it's a 12,000-acre resort, Rob. And I talked to Michael Kaiser a couple of years ago, and he said their aim is eventually to own 100,000 acres. The vast majority of it will be renovated or, turned back into a natural habitat with sand dunes and scrub vegetation, just the way it was, you know, hundreds of thousands of years ago. And Michael Kaiser was telling me they think that will even bring elk back into the area because it'll be like their natural habitat. They'll be able to come down from wherever it is they're up in Canada and wander down into Sand Valley area. But they're very good stewards of the land too, Rob. They take very good care of the land. It's you can't really find anything negative to say about Sand Valley.
I think at some point Steve Stricker is going to become the resident pro up there. If they're bringing elk back, didn't he take an elk hunting trip one year? That first in the Mist tournament somewhere. And it just seems like it may not be far enough north for Steve's taste, but it's pretty close. Of course, it is north enough for Steve's taste. Timberstone Golf Club up in Pine Mountain, Michigan, in the UP, one of two courses that has gone up for sale. You know, despite this great golf boom that we're in, there's a number of golf course owners that are testing the market. The other is down closer to the Madison area at Beaver Dam Country Club, an 18-hole course near the Horicon Marsh, not Old Hickory, which was sold a couple years ago, but Beaver Dam Country Club. And the asking price there is $2 million. Gary, what do you make out of these courses that kind of go on and off the market? We just saw Troy Burnchain's hands recently. Dennis McCann had that story. It's on our website. It's kind of interesting to me seeing these you know, golf course owners kind of testing the water and seeing what they can get for their property.
It is. And Timberstone's one of my favorite places, Rob. Have you ever been up there and played?
I have not been up there, no.
It's a really, really good golf course. You know, very scenic. A lot of elevation change carved in, basically in the side of Pine Mountain. And it's a cool place. I think the asking price is pretty steep, but you get a great golf course, and I think a lodge comes along with that. And it's a destination. I mean, there's a lot of golfers, even in Wisconsin, who drive up there and play there and go over to Harris, Michigan, and play the courses at Sweetgrass, and then go up to Marquette and play Gray Walls. They've done a great job marketing those courses up there. So whoever eventually buys Timberstone is walking into, I think, a moneymaker.
Well, we'll keep an eye on that. And, you know, of course, I think, too, though, you know, a reminder that owning a golf course is much easier when you're thinking about it, Gary, than when you actually do it, correct?
Very correct, Rob. I would second that.
So as we look ahead here, we're getting pretty close to U.S. Open local qualifying. Those have started around the country, but we still have, what, a week or so before the one in Wisconsin. What's on Gary D'Amato's horizon here as we look forward to the next couple weeks here on Wisconsin.golf?
Yeah, U.S. Open qualifying typically kicks off my coverage season, Rob. And headed up there May 11th. I looked at the field, and boy, I don't know if you've seen the field, Rob, but some really good names in there. Yeah, Jordan Ibrugi's in the field. Austin Kanzorski, who shot the 70 at Wild Rock a couple of years ago in horrible conditions. Tony Romo's in the field, Rob, at Wild Rock.
Wow.
So, and most of the good college players that we've talked about on this podcast and written about are all in the field. It's a very strong field. Mick Smith, some good, very good teaching professionals in the field. So it's going to be a shootout up there, I think.
Boy, I hadn't taken a look at this, but you know, a couple names that come to mind just because I've been following the college ranks. Jim Callahan, an amateur out of De Pere, Gary. He's up at Northern Michigan, worked his way into the number three spot in the lineup. You know, Northern Michigan, not exactly a golf power, but he went to Northern Michigan, I believe, to play baseball, and now is playing golf. And now he must have caught the bug, because you don't play in a U.S. Open qualifier if you don't think you can get something out of it. Aiden Cudney, one of the top junior golfers, and probably on more recruiting lists at the Division I level than any other kid in Wisconsin at this point. He'll be teeing it up again. I think this will be his second time. You mentioned Hunter Eichhorn, Griffin Borella going to be there. Boy, this is Austin. Did you say Austin Gaugert? Did you know Austin Gaugert was there? I mean, you've got guys ready for all near winners. You've got Tony Romo, who won the celebrity portion of the or actually finished second, I guess, because he lost to Marty Fish in a playoff. I can't believe they played off the celebrity division. They didn't split the
trophy. Yeah. It is really a good feeling. Our good pal Jim Dewing, you know, a senior golfer. I think Jim's 60 or 61, somewhere in there. He's going to give it a shot. I love that. I love that these U.S. Open qualifiers bring out everybody from, you know, junior golfers to guys playing senior golf in Wisconsin. It's pretty cool.
Boy, this is going to go all day. Look at the number of of guys in here. That's pretty impressive. Max Schmidtke, who was named Rookie of the Year at South Dakota, the transfer out of Illinois Springfield, had a great year for the Coyotes. I want to say, or Coyotes, out there at South Dakota. I always get the Coyotes and the Jackrabbits of South Dakota State mixed up, so I think I got that right. This is Kaylor Steger, who's done a tour on the mini tours here. Boy, this is a pretty impressive. Peter Webb's going to play. You have to find out. You know, Peter got married on January 1st, and we haven't seen much of him in any of the tours, so I'm not sure how much he's playing and or really wants to play. But and then Blake Wisdom out at Bucknell. I don't know if Bucknell has had. I got to look at the I think it's the Patriot League. That's another guy that could be playing in the NCAA tournament yet this year, because he's played really well out there out of Lake Geneva, and he's played in tour qualifiers. He's played in Monday qualifiers. The kid loves to test himself. Boy, you're going to have a fun time up there. I just hope that you and Jim have better weather than last time. That's all I'm asking.
Yeah, I just hope it's not like yesterday, Rob, for those guys. We're due for a nice 70-degree, beautiful day, and hopefully it'll be May 11th up there. And then, you know, the Tournament of Champions, which traditionally kicks off the tournament season in Wisconsin, is Monday, Rob, up at Sheboygan Riverdale. And that, I haven't looked at the field for that, but that tournament always attracts some really good players. I think Tom Halla, our good buddy, is a 5-time champion up there. And we certainly have a lot going on between high schools, colleges, and the start of our regular tournament season in Wisconsin here.
And as we sign off here on Talking.Golf, Steve Stricker still tied atop the leaderboard. Jimenez with one hole to play, Scott Replank with one, but we'll continue to follow Steve's progress through the weekend. And then Casey Danielson becomes the latest Wisconsin golfer to start her Friday round here with a birdie. She is one under on her second round out in LA, and she is currently T35. So we'll continue to follow her progress. And then both Alyssa Farrell and Tess Hackworthy, 3 over par in the Epson Tour event down in Garden City, Kansas. So boy, you know, we started this website for a reason, Gary. It's because there's a lot of golf that is being played very well by a lot of people around the state of Wisconsin and around the country by people from Wisconsin. And it's been a fun quote unquote off season, right?
There is no off season anymore, Rob, is there? I mean, we hardly had any time off between colleges, high schools, tournament golf in the winter, following the pro tours, following Stricker, Kelly, all these guys. There's really no off season anymore.
No, but so we'll continue to follow that, and Gary, we'll summarize it as best we can again next week. How's that sound?
That sounds good, Rob.
All right, for Gary D'Amato, this is Rob Hernandez. Talking.Golf, sponsored by the 2022 American Family Insurance Championship in Madison. Tournament play runs June 10th through the 12th at University Ridge Golf Course. Of course, it'll be the Friday concert series, all part of the full experience of the AmFam Championship. Lady A, the headliner for the concert series, Friday, June 10th. You can get tickets to the concert, tickets to the golf tournament, on sale now at amfamchampionship.com. Since its debut in 2016, the AmFam Championship has raised $12.6 million for charity, with proceeds distributed by Steve Stricker and the American Family Insurance Foundation. For Gary, I'm Rob. We'll talk golf again next week.